Far sideline, they get it into Gershner to Brock, or Beisner, layup good! It was a set play, Quinn to Noah to Bryce for two, and Beloit's up nine, perfectly executed by the Trojans.
High school basketball last night, we had a few games on the radio, Beloit and Ellsworth, and the Ellsworth girls win 47-39. Peyton Remus led the way for Beloit with 18 points and 3 three-pointers, but it wasn't enough, and the Beloit boys, a much-needed win over Ellsworth in the nightcap, 59-47. Wyatt Brockman, 19 points, 4 three-pointers. Noah Gershner, 14 points, 4 three-pointers, and Beloit was able to hold down Will Cravens in the second half after at 18 of his 22 in the first half. Ellsworth had 8 threes in the game. Beloit had 8 threes, 4 by Brockman, 4 by Gershner. And Bryce Beisner chipped in with 13, 7 there in the fourth quarter as Beloit made the plays down the stretch after trailing by as many as 9 at the end of one. Go on to win it by 12. Big win for Beloit boys. They're 12-5 overall, 6-2 in league play. Ellsworth falls at 10-6, 4-3 in league play. Beloit has tonight off, and then they'll have important games on Valentine's Day night against Sacred Heart. And that's on Tuesday, and we'll have those for you on live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Jason, you had games last night, Lincoln Rock Hills.
Yeah.
Give us a wrap
up. What a low-scoring but competitive ball game in the girls' part of the doubleheader, and Rock Hills won that one 37-33. Neither team got above 6-point lead, so it was back and forth, and Lincoln actually had the 3-point lead in the fourth quarter, but Rock Hills made a couple plays, really locked down on defense the last half of the fourth quarter, and eventually got a couple shots to fall, and they won at 37-33. In the boys' game, again, back and forth, pretty close throughout the first three quarters. Rock Hills would actually eventually get it up to 9-point lead late third, but then Lincoln went to a 1-3-1 three-quarters court trap, and it really switched the momentum. And then from there, Lincoln started to hit some shots. A couple of those shots for Lincoln kind of hung on the rim, and they fell in. Rock Hills had a couple that about did the same thing, but those fell out. And eventually, a 20-point fourth quarter for Lincoln, and they won 50-38.
All right, so Super Bowl 57 is coming up on Sunday. Eagles and Chiefs, we'll preview that coming up here in just a little bit. Let's hand it off, Dusty, for wrestling.
Yes, Beloit beat Minneapolis beat Beloit, excuse me. There was a final duel last night for both Beloit and Smith Center for the regular season for their varsity competition, and Minneapolis beat Beloit 45-27, and Smith Center beat Republic County 37-33. Those are the wrestling scores from last night. Again, that's all at ncksports.com. If you ever miss scores or standings or schedule updates there on the website, you can find them. Also, regional wrestling is coming up this weekend, so we'll cover that here real quick as we have the Osborne girls in the 4-1A regional wrestling tournament here on Saturday, and they do have two wrestlers competing, Andy Kendig at the 120-pound weight class and Cheyenne Noel at 140. Kendig has picked up 4 victories on the season. Noel has 3 wins in matches heading into regionals, and they'll be going up against some very tough competition as their coach Jason Noel knows that it'll be a tough one in Hoisington coming up tomorrow.
Man, there's a lot of good teams there at Hoisington. And of course, we're 4-1A girls regionals, so that's going to be really tough. You get them big schools with a lot of girls and a lot of talent, so it's going to be tough. But you never know. There's always a chance every time you step on the mat. So I'm excited.
4-1A girls regional, again, that's a one-day affair in Hoisington. They'll get underway at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. So that's a look at high school wrestling. Again, we'll post later today. We'll have a link to the regionals that'll show the brackets and everything like that. They're at ncksports.com. All right, high school basketball, we'll move on to that tonight here in North Central Kansas. We have schedules moved around, and so just one doubleheader tonight on the radio. The Lakeside Knights hosting Southern Cloud on Z96.3 and Katy Country 94 in the girls' contest. Lakeside 11-6, 6-2 in the NPL. Southern Clouds 2-13, and 1-7. Lady Knights won the first meeting in the NPL tournament play-in game 55-20, January 13th. Their coach Scott Germark gave his hopes for tonight's contest.
I just want to see us to come out and work on things that we need to work on, you know, hitting our outside shots, getting the ball in and staying aggressive and making sure we're getting better at passing the ball around and with our entry passes. You know, we're at times this year we have a hard time of trying to throw passes through hands, and the girls know that we have to take a different approach to that. But just taking care of the ball and coming out and playing good team basketball.
And the Lakeside girls will be a heavy favorite tonight in that contest. And then following the girls' game, the Lakeside boys are 8-9, 4-4 in the NPL. Southern Cloud comes in at 6-10 and 2-6. Lakeside coach Drew Dusky still expects the Warriors to be a challenge in tonight's contest.
they're going to be just, you know, one of the most athletic teams we face today. We've got height, and we're going to have to be tuned up defensively and make sure we can be consistent on offense, because it's going to be a tough go for us on Friday against Southern Cloud for sure.
So Drew Dusky expects a challenge here, like I said, tonight. And Southern Cloud has shown the ability to stay with teams. They lost to Osborne by just six, so they have the talent to be in these games. And so it should be an interesting game tonight on the boys' side. Coverage for Lakeside Southern Cloud on Z96.3. The Lake starts at 5:50 with girls' pregame. Tip-off at 6 o'clock. The boys' game will follow. I'll have the call from Downs here tonight in Northern Plains League basketball. Other games that are on the schedule for tonight include St. John's Tipton at Chase, Sylvan Lucas at Wilson, Thunder Ridge at Tescott, Natoma's at Pike Valley, Osborne's at Stockton in a non-league game. Also tonight, Smith Center at Norton in the Mid-Continent League, and in the NCKL, Concordia's hosting Chapman. Again, the full schedule for NPL NCAA posted at ncksports.com. So that should catch you up on what's going on in local sports here in North Central Kansas.
All right, college basketball coming up this weekend is number 9 KU taking on Oklahoma. KU nearly lost to Oklahoma earlier in the season. Oklahoma couldn't finish it. KU pulled one out of the fire. Bill Self, head coach of the Jayhawks, on the rematch in Norman with pregame 11:30 on Z96.3 Lake coming up tomorrow morning.
We played pretty good against OU and was down 10 with 4 minutes left and then somehow eked out a win. And, you know, Oklahoma's good enough to beat Alabama by 30, so you would think that you know, they'll be fired up for us, and we got to get better.
So the Jayhawks in action, and this is one of those they can't stumble upon. Oklahoma's really struggled the last three in a row. They were beaten by West Virginia by 34. They did beat Alabama by 24, but they have not won a game since then. But KU needs to be on alert because Oklahoma is capable. Certainly, as Brian Haney mentioned, the voice of Jayhawks yesterday on our show, is that Oklahoma beat Alabama by 24. That gets KU's attention. Number 12, K-State is facing Texas Tech on the road in Lubbock. Looks like should be a win, but it's never easy to win in Lubbock. K-State beat the Red Raiders 68-58 on January 21st. Wildcats are 19-5 on the season. They're part of that four-way tie for second in the Big 12 behind first-place Texas. Jerome Tang, head coach of the Wildcats, on his team's mentality coming down the stretch in Big 12 conference play.
Success has a way of making people relax. It takes away a little bit of your edge. It's just human nature, right? And so to fight human nature, that's our job as coaches, to try and figure this out. And what I'm hoping is that our older guys come back and don't allow it. They be the ones that hold each other accountable to compete at a certain level and have an edge. Because really, we will pick to finish last in the league. We could still finish last in the league, right? So we haven't accomplished anything, right? Nothing's changed. And the reason why we were successful early is because we played with love and joy and with a chip on our shoulder. And so nothing should change.
K-State Texas Tech tips off 6 o'clock on ESPN Plus from Lubbock tomorrow night. Also in the Big 12, West Virginia's number 5, Texas at 11. Number 17, TCU hosts Baylor at 3. Baylor ranked 14th. Oklahoma State's at number 11. Iowa State at 5. Iowa State has not lost a home game this year. Quick thoughts on K-State.
Going out and continuing to execute and play the way that they know they can. And games like these are the ones that are important. Like I said, you want to go on the road and get this win and just keep yourself right there in the hunt for the title in the conference and continue to get better. So I think they have a great opportunity here to go ahead and do that coming up on Saturday.
Big 12 women's hoops coming up tomorrow. KU is at Texas Tech at 2 o'clock on ESPN+. K-State hosts number 16 Oklahoma at 1 o'clock on Sunday on ESPNU.
In the 2022 AP Most Valuable Player is Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes, MVP. Shocking development there. Here's his message.
To the Chiefs organization, Clark Hunt, Brett Veach, Andy Reid, the staff, and most of all, my teammates, I would never be standing here today without y'all. Every day, given everything that we have together to go for the ultimate goal, the Super Bowl. Let's continue to go for that dream this weekend.
And Andy Reid on Mahomes winning another MVP.
I think he's deserving of it for sure. He works extremely hard, as you know, at his profession. He works hard to be the best. He tries to help our team be the best. He says it every day when he comes into practice, into the huddle. Let's be great today. And he lives that. And my hat goes off to him for that. Very proud of him for it, the way he goes about his business.
Thoughts on Mahomes being MVP? Shocking development last night.
Yeah. I was a little surprised that the voting was as lopsided as it was, 48-1-1. So you know, I thought Mahomes would win convincingly, but I didn't think it'd be 48-1. But, you know, here we are. Hurts and Allen got the other votes.
Yeah, maybe Hurts gets 3 votes. Yeah. It was pretty obvious.
If Hurts didn't get hurt, it would have been a lot.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I think that would have made it a little bit more interesting had that not happened. But I think got down the stretch, you knew how it was going to go.
5 years as a starter, 5 AFC title games at home, 3 Super Bowl appearances, 1 Super Bowl ring, maybe 2 after Sunday. MVP of the league twice in 5 years. Super Bowl MVP once, maybe twice after Sunday. He's only 27. It is the greatest start of any quarterback in the history of the National Football League.
Yes.
Anybody that even debates that is a fool. I mean, it's called facts. It's all there in front of you. All the numbers. You know, it's interesting. Some of the things, arguments that people make is, well, this guy's got more rings than this guy. Okay, so the argument against LeBron James is Jordan has more rings than LeBron James. That's one of the knocks.
Right.
Bill Russell has more rings than Michael Jordan. Why isn't Bill Russell considered the greatest of all time? Joe Burrow's better than Patrick Mahomes because he was 3-0 against Mahomes. But where the hell is the discussion of Jake Plummer being better than Tom Brady when he was 3-0 against Tom Brady and one of those wins was in the playoffs? See, it's a convenient thing to throw out there to fit your agenda. When you want to sit here and say, well, you know, Mahomes is the greatest, okay? And then you do ignore rings by another guy, but then you use the ring argument in another sport, you're hypocritical and contradicting what you're saying. And when you shove stats out to push your agenda and say this guy is the greatest of all time, and then you don't acknowledge the stats in the other argument, once again, it's hypocritical and counterproductive. Patrick Mahomes, at the age of 27, and especially if he get a Super Bowl win on Sunday, will have accomplished more than any other quarterback in his first 5 years in the league. Yes, Tom Brady, first 5 years in the league, did win 3 rings. He also had a defense that carried him. He had a clutch kicker. They were a heavy underdog against the Rams. Now, they won. But go look at Brady's numbers. They weren't 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns in year one with one of the worst defenses the Chiefs have ever had. And they still were a D Ford's offsides penalty of making the Super Bowl and beating those Patriots with Tom Brady.
I was just about to say Big Ben had a pretty close team-wise. Yeah. I mean, maybe a round or two different for Mahomes still team-wise, but not didn't put up near the numbers or the impact. He was still kind of learning the game, as still a little bit of a game manager, as Tom Brady was in the beginning. They just let Mahomes go, and Mahomes put up, you know, what, 5,000 yards, and then now here's another MVP. So, yeah, it's a little bit different look for Mahomes, and so you can't argue it at all.
Listen, Dan Marino accomplished more in his first 5 years than Tom Brady did individually.
Right.
He did. He was a better quarterback. Marino's a better quarterback in his first 5 years than Tom Brady. It's not even close when you look up the numbers on it either. He went to 1 Super Bowl and never made it back. Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't he never make it back? His defense has stunk. He usually didn't have a running game. Brady's almost always had that. So I'm not trying to knock Tom Brady, but the point is that at the age of 27, Patrick Mahomes has done more than any other quarterback in NFL history. And anybody that debates that, anybody that wants to say, here's the funny thing. If you don't embrace the facts, then you can't use facts to brace any other argument you have in your life. If you're just ignoring facts that are there, then I better never hear you use a fact to back up your own argument. See my point?
If you're not going
to acknowledge my facts or Dusty's facts or Jason's facts in an argument, then why the hell should I acknowledge your fact? Okay? Wait a minute. But this is a fact. Well, so is mine. Go look it up. Put it side by side. Listen, you poll any NFL general manager right now. You can have any player in the league right now. You can pick any guy to start your franchise with, any guy, every one of them, I'll bet you, every one of them is going to say Patrick Mahomes. And he's 27. He's played 5 years. He's not 24 like Jalen Hurts. They're still going to say Patrick Mahomes. If you would put Patrick Mahomes, age of 27, and Tom Brady at the age of 27 next to each other, all right, and you said pick which quarterback you want, and you saw the tape of both, and you saw the stats of both, and yeah, Brady has 3 rings, and technically Mahomes has 1, but he might have 2 after Sunday. Who do you think GMs would have picked?
Patrick Mahomes.
Hell yeah! I mean, this is just, it's silly that we have these talking heads on television trying to put down Patrick Mahomes. All it is people that are jealous. It is people that simply want to be contrarian just to argue, to argue. That's it. That's all it is. Because they know, if they have if any semblance of any cognitivity, they know that Mahomes has done more in 5 years than any quarterback in NFL history. They know it. They don't want to admit it. Just because you don't admit it doesn't mean you don't know it. And that's the case. Same thing with the Michael Jordan deniers out there. All right, there's a lot of Michael Jordan deniers out there. And I sit here and I'm talking about LeBron versus Michael. And I, once again, I say, well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a pretty amazing player. Oscar Robertson was an amazing player. Pistol Pete Maravich was an amazing player. Wilt Chamberlain was amazing. Bill Russell was amazing. And he didn't have to score on his team, but he did all the other stuff. If he ended up scoring 27 a game, we'd talk differently about Russell. All he did was win championships. And I thought that was a big part of being the greatest. And then we use it for Jordan, but we just ignore Bill Russell. It's like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is pretty important. He won lots of scoring titles, and he won championships, and Kareem isn't mentioned as the greatest of all time. Why not?
Right.
He was the, he led the NBA in scoring for 38 freaking years until LeBron finally broke it. So it is interesting how we use these arguments. Well, this guy's greater because this guy never lost a championship game. Well, he never went seven games. Yes, he did. Jordan went seven games, not in the NBA Finals. But that's your argument. Now you're going to focus on just the NBA Finals. Jordan went to seven games, went against seven games in the Indiana Pacers. Now, they didn't lose. They didn't lose game seven, all right? And then people say, well, LeBron is better than Jordan, or Jordan's better than LeBron. Well, I saw the question the other day. If it was game seven of the NBA Finals, who would you take, Jordan or LeBron? And I saw somebody say, I'd take LeBron because Jordan never had to play a game seven NBA Finals. Because I only know what LeBron can do in Game 7 NBA Finals, which I thought was funny. But another person said, come on. If it was Jordan versus LeBron, Game 7, do or die, win or take all, who would you pick? I'd pick Michael Jordan still. Now, other people may pick LeBron, but I think there are more LeBron people may actually pick Michael Jordan in a win or do all season on the line. But that still doesn't mean that Jordan's the greatest of all time. That's just a situation that fits your argument. The other one would come back is, could Jordan have gone to three different organizations with three different head coaches and whole different schemes and cast of characters and went to 10 NBA Finals? Now, Jordan fans are going to say, yes, he could have. And we don't know. So that's convenient to throw that out there, you know? And then, well, Jordan would have scored as many points as LeBron had he not retired a couple times. Once again, don't know that because Jordan did decide to retire. And LeBron has been durable and played for almost 20 years. So when we get back to Patrick Mahomes, he's the best quarterback in NFL history for the first 5 years of a career. And those that deny it just simply don't want to deal with facts.
Right. We're going to get into a situation possibly with Mahomes where we're starting to rank Brady and Montana. I always thought the Montana 4-0 Super Bowl is a little bit of a flawed argument, especially when Brady would tied it like at 4-4. Brady was 4-2. I actually think that's better than 4-0 because that just means Joe Montana lost a round earlier. Two rounds earlier, you know, in two situations, he lost a round earlier than Tom Brady did. You know, you could say, well, Montana never lost the big game. Well, that means Tom Brady won two more AFC championship games than
right.
than Joe Montana won NFC championship games. True. So Joe Montana was losing in those games. Tom Brady just lost a couple round later. So I find that Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana, 4-0, Michael mm-hmm. Jordan even. You got to get close to the number of that zero, but you know, if you do reach it, I find that to be a flawed argument.
We get caught up in championships. I mean, Robert Horry, why isn't he considered more? And
right.
Steve Kerr,
yeah.
I mean, as the greatest players that ever lived. And then I see these talking heads wanting to put down Mahomes. I take Jalen Hurts over Patrick Mahomes. Jalen Hurts is the better player. Well, who's the better quarterback? Because that's the position they play.
Yeah.
I seen Dan Orlovsky, who I love. I think he does a wonderful job. He said before the Bengals Chiefs game that Joe Burrow is the better quarterback, but Patrick Mahomes is the better player. I'm like, what? Doesn't even make sense. Like, They both play quarterback. So if you're saying Burrow is better than Mahomes at quarterback, does Mahomes play tight end that I'm not aware of?
That's also a way to not answer the
question.
That's
exactly right. Yeah. That means you're hedging both ways. Yeah. You're saying it's a tie without saying it's a tie. Yeah. So you say that you're picking something. That just it's silly. It's silly. But here's the point. Mahomes won another MVP last night. He's 27 years old. And with the Chiefs lengthening their window, with all the flexibility they have with the cap, all the draft picks they have, they're a young team. They got a lot of key players now on defense that are on rookie contracts, so you got a window there. Listen, the Chiefs should be good for a very long time, and when you have 15, you always have a chance. And this is all he's done in 5 years, and usually what they say is athletes don't hit their prime until, believe it or not, 27 or 28. That's the prime years, 26, 27, 28, depending on the sport, and you can go to about 32. There's like a five-year, 27 to 32, typically somewhere in that range, depending on the sport.
The experience kicks the in. Athleticism.
Yes. Right.
Right.
It kicks in, your knowledge, your wisdom. So, you know, look what Mahomes has done the first 5 years. And I think what scares people, and I think this is why, this is what I think. I think that a lot of these talking heads and people that want to deny the facts about Mahomes in his first 5 years, they all know that it's coming. They all know that there's going to be a point in time where they are going to look even dumber than they already look, because 5 years from now, there is going to be no argument.
From that aspect.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's... Right.
Yeah.
If everything
and 10
goes
years
the,
from now,
if 10
years
goes the
same
way. If everything goes the way it's going right now,
yes,
there will only be one person that Patrick Mahomes can and will be compared to.
Right.
And that's Tom Brady.
And that's only because of the rings.
Yeah.
It won't be because of the stats.
No. And it's
because Brady's longevity with his stats.
Yeah. And you know, he got to a point where in his career where he was putting up numbers.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, Randy Moss, he had 50 touchdowns, 5,000
yards. And even last season, you know, he was.
Well, they throw the ball every down. You get lots
of
touchdowns.
I mean, he was in the running for MVP last year and had a great year.
Absolutely.
Statistically.
Right.
But, you know, it's going to. I do give him credit for that kind of middle part of his career had a lot of yards and a lot of stats.
Even in his 40s.
You can't look at that first part of his career and say he was better than Patrick Mahomes. You can't look at anybody's first 5 years as a starter in this league and say they were better than Patrick Mahomes with a straight face and with numbers to back it up. You can't do it. It's not possible. And so, but yeah, 5 years from now, if things go the way they did the first 5 years, those are the only two guys that people are going to be talking about at that point, because I think you've removed yourself far enough from the 1980s and early 90s, right? From Joe Montana, who seemed to be in this conversation with Tom Brady before.
Sure.
And so you're so far away from it that the younger people, they don't even know who that's going to be anymore.
Right.
Like, it's sad, but they won't know Joe Montana. Like, they'll see a highlight or a clip or something of a Super Bowl where he was good. But, you know, in 5 years, it's Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes that they're going to be talking about. And maybe there's somebody else coming up. You know, Joe Burrow might do something crazy that puts himself in the backside of that conversation, or somebody else might,
Josh Allen,
you know, and somebody might be part of that on the backside who's coming up trying to meet those guys. But, I mean, the trajectory says that it's Mahomes right now, and nobody else is going to touch him.
No,
but again, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to do the same type of things, like for the next 5 years too, to keep.
Exactly.
It's all about longevity to keep that conversation going.
And the other thing is, he's beaten all these great quarterbacks head to head. The Burrow was the one he couldn't beat. Now he got that out of the way. So you really can't. I mean, you could argue it, I guess, if the Bengals beat the Chiefs next time. Well, Burrow's 4-1 against Mahomes. The argument still may be there a little bit. You know, Brady, you know, had a losing record against the Chiefs in his career. So he didn't even have a winning record against every team in the NFL in his career, which is pretty impressive. He did it against everybody except one team. But it just goes to show you that sometimes a team maybe has your number a little bit. The Saints did towards the end against Brady. Sometimes there's a certain defensive player that sacks you more than another when you're a quarterback. And so it is interesting, too, because Brady did lose Super Bowls. You know, the argument with Jordan and LeBron is, well, Jordan never lost in the finals. Well, as Jason accurately pointed out, Jordan also lost. You know, he didn't go to the finals as early as LeBron did.
Right.
But LeBron was in the weak Easter conference. Like, yeah, okay, we can argue each way come Sunday. But what if Michael Jordan was 6-1 in NBA finals?
Right. It takes a little of that mystique.
Wouldn't the discussion be different?
Yeah.
Wouldn't the discussion be different today if Michael Jordan lost to Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets and didn't retire that in 94? And they lost to the Rockets, and Jordan even said that was the team that he worried about the most in the docuseries. They just didn't match up with the Rockets, and the Rockets won two straight titles when Jordan was out. If the Bulls and Jordan went 6-1 or 5-1 in the NBA Finals, and LeBron right now is 4-6, wouldn't the conversation be a little bit different? Because you always got that perfection thing, and that's what was held against Brady, was that Montana was 4-0, but when Brady goes to twice as many Super Bowls, suddenly people kick the Montana argument to the side. Now there's a few people that still hang on to it, and if LeBron gets to another Finals or two and goes to twice as many Finals as Jordan. If the Montana argument gets shoved to the side because Brady went to way more, so we gloss over three losses in the finals, shouldn't we be able to do the same thing with LeBron James versus Michael Jordan?
I'm not saying like Jim Kelly at 0-4 is going to be thought of the same way because it's just a little bit of a different. No, I mean you still have to approach the same number of those rings. That Michael Jordan had. You got to get close. I don't know if.
Well, that's your opinion.
Right,
you don't have to.
Right. But if you do reach, say LeBron gets to six, and I just think it's a flawed argument. You can still think Michael Jordan's the better player. That's fine. But I just think using that argument is just a little bit flawed because LeBron would have actually a better playoff record overall than Michael Jordan.
So let's get back then to how it compares with Mahomes. Yeah. And Dusty said Mahomes versus Brady, because that's the argument you're going to have probably 5 years from now. It's even an argument some people are having right now, is that one thing that you do have going for you is I don't think Mahomes has to get seven rings to be considered the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't even think he needs five. I think he might need four. He definitely needs more than one. Yeah. But he could end up going to, you know, 8-9 Super Bowls. Brady went to 10. And Mahomes goes, you know, if he goes and wins 5 and goes to 8 Super Bowls, he's 5-3, and Brady's 7-3.
Yeah, you could. And if there's a difference in numbers, you can definitely make that argument. I would definitely.
But Brady wasn't perfect in the Super Bowl. So once Brady went to enough of them, the Montana argument disappeared, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if LeBron, believe it or not, would win a few more, would the Jordan disappear?
To me,
I don't think it would.
The argument's not going to go away. People will still do it, but I think it should go away. That's my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. I know where Dusty sits.
Yeah,
Dusty might not be as objective as we are.
I think one of the big differences between when you're going to compare Jordan and LeBron and then Brady and Montana, let's say that's the comparison here.
Yeah.
Because I know Montana had an injury that made him miss a year and a half, right? But
Jordan retired
for 2 years in the prime of his career, basically, right? Like when his team was the absolute best.
Right.
So everybody always still uses that, right? Like you're taking him out when he's still at his best. And they always come with the if, right? If he would have stayed, then
they would have won 8 in a row.
A lot of people say they would have won 8 in a row.
I disagree.
I don't believe that.
They would have lost
because
the
I
fire.
Think the last dance would have been in 96.
Yes.
Not 98. You know, it'd have been earlier and they wouldn't have stayed together for 8 years
totally
to do
agree.
It. If you actually watch the documentary, you know what happened back then. But that's always part of it though. Is like he was still good enough to do it and he just decided to walk away, right? Mm-hmm. Like I always will say that Barry Sanders was a better running back than Emmitt Smith.
Right.
Emmitt Smith has the yards, right?
Right?
He's got the records. But Barry Sanders, I watched play and I understand he was better than Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith had a way better offensive line.
Yep, absolutely. But so we can always use some kind of argument to back it up for ourselves is what I'm saying. And with the hardcore Jordan fans, it's not going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what LeBron James does.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with our eyes and we saw LeBron play. We saw LeBron join the super team, you know, leave. That's held against him in some way. You talk about how it can help his argument going to three different teams. It's held against him with Jordan fans because Jordan didn't need to do that to win his six titles.
Right.
And so there's always going to be something that's in there that's going to go with that. And the fact that Jordan stepped away is actually something that people are using for his
which is unfair to LeBron because he actually
played all those games
all these years.
And we can look at it. The Jordan fan can look at everything that he did.
Sure.
And you can total up all the playoff points and the all-time points and this. And LeBron's still like 5 points per game below Michael Jordan,
right?
And so you'll look at all that, and people will still use all that years down the road.
Yeah,
but then I don't think it's going to matter, because I don't know that LeBron's actually going to be able to. I mean, he's got to have a lot of help now to get to the finals, right? To be able to, like Jason said, to reach six,
right?
And so, but Mahomes would be the same type.
But my point is, he shouldn't have to get the six.
No, and I'm not saying I.
And Mahomes shouldn't have to get the seven.
Should. No. But there's going to be that faction of fans that think he does have to get to six.
Right, right. And some that think Mahomes has to get to seven.
Yeah.
Say Mahomes keeps getting to an AFC championship game or Super Bowl and just doesn't get, you know, past two. It's going to be tough. Unless it's just ridiculous numbers and just a ridiculous string of getting to title game after title game. But it's going to be tough if you don't have 4 to 5 to start really comparing them to Brady. I don't think you necessarily have to.
I think you
got to
get the four. Yeah. I think you got to get the four you want to. And then once again, how are you going to answer the question? Who's the greatest quarterback of all time? Who's the greatest winner of all time?
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who's the greatest leader of all time?
We can
answer both ways come Sunday. Listen, I think Mahomes is the most talented quarterback we've ever seen in the National Football League. Talented. He's more talented than Tom Brady. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's got the stronger arm. He's more mobile. I mean, he's the modern day quarterback, and that's not a knock on Brady. Brady was a 6th-round pick. Mahomes was a 1st-round pick.
Right.
And I'm not trying to knock what Brady did at all. And I'm not even saying Mahomes is the greatest quarterback all time right now. But he's trending that way. Now, there's some people already have said it. They're like, he's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. Now, I agree. He's the greatest quarterback I've seen, and I'm biased because he's on my team. He's for the Chiefs, so he's the greatest quarterback that I've seen. He's done things on the field that I've never seen guys do before. It's like street ball, and it's amazing, and it's fun to watch. And sometimes I think he gets bored and does certain things that maybe he shouldn't do. He's done less of that the last year or so, and that's how talented he is. But saying that he's the greatest quarterback you've ever seen doesn't mean that you're saying he's the greatest of all time. Right. See, people take that the wrong way. Like, I'm just saying that's the great. Like, when I say Bo Jackson is the greatest athlete that I ever saw, I don't know if I'm necessarily saying he's the greatest athlete of all time, because I didn't see a whole bunch of other athletes before I was born. But for me, during my lifetime, he's the greatest athlete that I saw. Mm-hmm. But does that mean he's the greatest athlete of all time? Well, I'm not necessarily saying that. I mean, obviously put him up there.
Right.
And so these conversations, arguments are interesting, and they're always very easy to fill time on a sports talk show, because you just start debating, well, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame or not?
Right.
Oh, well, he bet on baseball. No, here we go. 3 hours later, you haven't accomplished anything. But Mahomes, the fact that we're already talking about he might be the greatest quarterback that's ever played at 27, according to various people, is because of how great of a start he's off to.
Yep.
That's why people are saying it. He is trending. If he plays till he's 40, he is going to be in the top 2 or 3 of every statistical category imaginable to mankind, and he'll lead in touchdown passes the way he's going. He'll lead in yardage the way he's going. And he'll probably end up leading or being close to Brady for playoff wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes down to, of course, he might even have more conference title game appearances than Brady, but he may not have as many Super Bowl appearances, or he may not have as many Super Bowl wins. He might be 5-5 and 10 Super Bowls. And so then when you get to that point, I think you're getting nitpicky and you just don't want to. You're just a Brady guy that's never going to change your mind, much like you're a Michael Jordan fan. That won't change your mind, even though LeBron just became the all-time leading scorer in NBA history.
And
you'll never change that person's mind.
It's a slightly different argument, but I'm just saying, if you're a Brady guy, be a Brady guy. That's fine. That's fine.
But don't tell me that Brady had the best 5-year start of it.
And I'm just,
ridiculous.
And if you're a Michael guy, that's fine. If you're not going to change your mind, you're not going to change your mind. But this. We also have this idea that somehow LeBron has failed since he didn't hit Michael. Like, if he's only the second best player of all time.
He's been to the NBA Finals he's average a failure. Every other year.
Yeah, he's a failure. Or if Patrick Mahomes doesn't reach 7, that somehow he's a failure. No, that argument
is... That tells you how great you are.
Right.
That's how far you got to go to get to failure. He's a failure because he didn't go undefeated in NBA Finals. Yes. He's a failure because he went to different organizations. He's a failure because he retired and didn't get to 10 NBA Finals. He's a failure because he only played in 6 NBA Finals. Well, he retired for two of those NBA Finals. You know, one, he came back late. He's a failure because, you know, he didn't win 7 Super Bowls. Oh, goodness, he only won 5. What's wrong with that guy? Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's ludicrous and ridiculous when you think about it.
I would never say that Brady nor Mahomes didn't have help along the way. They both had good rosters and stuff like that. But there's also times that I wonder, like, if we don't give credit to those guys, that maybe Mahomes is dragging a 10-6 team a couple of times to the AFC Championship game, and Tom Brady is doing that as well. Mm-hmm. And the roster's good, but it's just not a championship roster unless somebody is dragging them along. And that's what the greats do. Like, LeBron James got to finals way before he should have because he drug a very mediocre roster, didn't, you know, no way with any mortal as there. You replace LeBron with even a good player,
LeBron was not a scorer coming in the league, but he scored 25 straight points against the Pistons to get them to the NBA Finals.
That and he, through the Magic Johnson comparison, he made those a little bit better too. And so,
but look at Mahomes now. If I told you guys, and we're going to preview the Super Bowl here in a moment, we've got off topic a little bit, but let's. This is very interesting. So, guys, let me present this to you. So I am making a case for a guy to be in the Hall of Fame. If I tell you right now that I have a candidate in his illustrious NFL career, here were his accomplishments, all right? 2-time MVP, 5 AFC Championship appearances, 3 Super Bowl appearances, Super Bowl championship, Super Bowl MVP, Pro Bowl every season he started, over 5,000 total yards more than once. Would that be enough to be in the Hall of Fame?
He's in right now.
Hey, no, that's my point. If Mahomes tomorrow, God forbid, I better not say this out loud, but if Mahomes has a career-ending injury anytime soon, he's already a Hall of Famer, is he not?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that proves the point I'm talking about. After 5 seasons in the NFL, Mahomes has Hall of Fame numbers. After 5. What other quarterback can you say that about? I can't come up with anybody.
Yeah.
No.
Unless you give unless it for you the 3 rings
right,
of Brady.
Unless
had,
you really want to say rings get you there.
Yeah.
Then
yeah, he wasn't. Brady wasn't MVP of the league his first 5 years, I'm pretty sure.
He never won MVP. He missed the playoffs 1 year.
Yeah,
I did all this research.
Yeah, right.
Because I was in a different argument about it.
But it's funny that you just look at his 5 seasons, and he's accomplished more than most NFL quarterbacks have ever accomplished in a 15-year career.
Yeah.
And guys like that are in the Hall of Fame. And Mahomes, he could retire tomorrow or right after he wins the Super Bowl on Sunday and say, that's it, I'm raising my kids. I got like $1 billion. I own sports franchises in Kansas City. I helped bring Whataburger. I'm a god in Kansas City. I'm just going to kick back, relax, get fat, and enjoy myself for the next 50 years.
Just going to be a soccer owner.
And he'd be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
first ballot, probably.
Soccer owner tomorrow and then just...
I decided to retire and play baseball. I'm going to pitch for the Royals. The Royals need some pitching. I want to do what Michael Jordan did. I want to go baseball route. So Mahomes is
my ownership stake, and I'm going to go ahead and play with him.
Yeah, why not? So let's get to the Super Bowl, the Chiefs and the Eagles. Chiefs looking for their second Super Bowl title under Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Chiefs are a 1.5-point underdog. 51 is the over-under. More on that in a moment. Andy Reid, you know, a lot of talk about Mahomes, clearly, but also Andy Reid is making his 4th appearance in the Super Bowl. He's 1-2 in his previous 3. Made it with the Eagles 1 year, made it with the Chiefs a couple of years. And there's all kinds of keys to the game. And Andy Reid thinks that one of the biggest keys starts up front.
When you get in the playoffs, that combination right there, the O-lines versus the D-lines on both teams, ends up being kind of the thing that wins or loses games. So, and it's magnified every level that you go up, every step of that you move up in the playoffs. And so the Super Bowl will be magnified the most between those two. And normally who wins that battle ends up winning the game.
And A lot of people say it's important to get to a nice start in the Super Bowl. Of course, it is. That would be perfect scenario, right? But there's other keys than just starting fast in the Super Bowl.
You want to get started fast. That's the objective in every game. But if something doesn't happen, the game is still four quarters. And you got to play the whole game. And one thing that jumps out at you in Super Bowls is turnovers. You got to limit the turnovers. And it's great to start fast, but that also, there are other factors in there that become important. Turnovers is probably one of the biggest ones.
No doubt. And we've seen that before, certainly in playoff games and Super Bowls and so forth and so on. And then, of course, when you get into Super Bowls, sometimes there's that unsung hero. Remember Larry Brown for the Cowboys, who was named MVP and then disappeared off the face of the earth after, I think, getting a contract after that game?
What makes it so interesting and people are so curious to watch, you don't know. You don't know who that person will be. But somebody will. In this game, there's somebody that we haven't mentioned, and just about everybody's been, there's somebody that hasn't been mentioned that's going to step up, and you're going to go, wow, that was a great job by that kid.
Daniel Sorensen, I think he's got, oh, wait a minute, he don't play for the Chiefs anymore. Some of those talking heads actually think Derek Johnson still plays for the Chiefs. But obviously, when you get to the Super Bowl for a third time, you're 1-1 in your first two. You clearly sit here and say, man, this is an opportunity here to get that ring that we had after losing to the Bucks a few years back. And these two teams are so good offensively. There's no question about that. Here is Reed on Spags and the test for his defense against the Eagles Sunday night.
Steve's very good. I've known him a long time. I've got trust in him, a lot of trust in him. He's got a good scheme, tremendous scheme. And he has a big test coming up on Sunday. So it's a great challenge. They've got a good offense. You know, they'll make some plays, and I know our defense will make some plays. So it's, you know, but that's the challenge there.
Test for both defenses, no question about it. Mahomes certainly is well aware that the Philadelphia Eagle defense and that defensive line, they combined to have 70 sacks this year.
I don't know, like a historic sack rate and the way they're able to get to the quarterback. And so everybody knows that everything starts up front. And so it would be a great challenge for our offensive line to try to do what they can in the run game and the pass game of protecting and run blocking. But, I mean, they got great DBs, they got great linebackers. And so when you have a great unit, it's about how can you execute and just prevent negative plays. And they've done a great job, especially in the playoffs, of causing negative plays. And turnovers are usually what win and lose a football game. And so for us, we understand it's going to be a great challenge through and through. But the defensive line is a special group.
So there's concerns, obviously, for the Chiefs against the Eagles. But the Eagles have concerns against the Chiefs, who had the best scoring offense in the league. And, of course, one of the first names that pops up after Patrick Mahomes is Kelce. Here's Nick Sirianni, head coach of the Eagles, on defending 87.
You got to give them different looks, and you got to understand that you're trying to take away the good things that he does, and he does a lot of things really well. You're just aware of where he is at all times, right? And that's any good playmaker. And obviously with him, he's made so many plays throughout his career, through this year, through the playoffs. We got to know where he is at all times. And it's not just one guy's job. Like you stop him, right? There's a lot of different hats that we'll throw at him and that we'll have to use. And this is why this is the greatest team sport there is. I mean, there's no other team sport like this. And so it's going to take all 11 of us on defense that are playing to make sure that we're accounting for him at all times.
Lots of subplots. Of course, the Kelce brothers, Andy Reid going against his former organization, so forth and so on. But some people may not be aware, although probably are now, that Nick Sirianni was wide receiver coach for the Chiefs. And Andy Reid came into town and let Sirianni go. Yeah, basically fired him. Of course, he didn't have a lot of good receivers to work with, did Nick Sirianni? He reflected on his time in KC.
This is the profession that I chose, right? And then you're gonna move around a little bit. You're gonna lose your job once in a while. And you know, he had a wide receiver coach, and who was also his assistant head coach, and I was the wide receiver coach there. And so naturally, I was just out. But I don't look at it that way. I actually have a lot of respect for the whole organization. Coach Reed had a lot of good times, both professionally and personally, in Kansas City. You know, that's where I met my wife. So got a lot of fond memories of Kansas City.
Yeah, saying all the right things, but deep down, you know, he wants to stick it to the Chiefs and Andy Reid, and that's what you want. That's the competitive spirit you want. That's what drives you. You know, I said this the other day, and I've talked with my kids about it a little bit, and I talked to my oldest a few years ago about this. We had kind of a frank conversation, and I said, what are your goals? That's it. Simple question. Mm-hmm. What are your goals? And he actually had a couple, which made me feel better, because at the time, this was back when he was probably 10, 11, 12 years old. I don't know what it was. I kind of was concerned about, you know, does he have any goals? And I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have goals. And I have a chip on my shoulder many times with people tell me I can't do something or they think this or that. I'm sure we've all gone through that. Mm-hmm. And so that serves as motivation. But to me, you can't get to where you want to go if you don't have goals. If you have no goals and you're just kind of running through the motions, well, I don't know. That would be concerning to me. And if you lack motivation, you don't have, and usually if you don't have goals, you lack motivation. Motivation is spurred by goals. And Nick Sirianni obviously has goals, and he had goals when he was let go by Andy Reid. And now he's a head coach of the Eagles in a Super Bowl and has a chance to, oddly enough, beat the guy that canned him, basically. That's interesting to me. Andy Reid has never lost in the Eagle-Chiefs series. And what I mean by that is when Andy Reid was a head coach of the Eagles, he was 3-0 against the Chiefs. When he's a head coach of the Chiefs, he's been 3-0 against the Eagles. So let's keep that trend going here for Super Bowl 52. And then to put a little bow on our conversation from earlier, we talked about Mahomes and his legacy already, just 5 seasons into his career, 6 seasons technically, but 5 years as a starter. Mahomes on what he's chasing Sunday.
What I'm chasing is, I'm never saying I'm chasing a player. I'm chasing that I don't have any regrets when I step off this football field. I understand how lucky I am to be in this organization. I understand how lucky I am to play with guys that are going to be Hall of Famers. And so when I'm looking back at the end of my career, I don't want to look back and be like, man, I didn't give everything I have to win Super Bowls because of the great people I have around me. And so when I get done with my career, I just want to make sure that I know that I gave everything I had on that football field.
Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest was with us a few weeks ago, and he made some interesting points. We talked about how the Chiefs can't lose to the Bengals 2 straight years AFC title game at home. You can't host 5 straight AFC title games that no team, no quarterback has ever done. 5 straight at home AFC title games. You can't go 2-3. And Matthew Derrick said, you're absolutely correct, Wade. You got to win this game. But not only that, he says, you want to create a legacy. When you win a second ring, that instantly moves you up a notch to be a Hall of Famer. His words, not mine. Mm-hmm. And you think about it. Listen, we know Kelsey's going to be a Hall of Famer. We know Mahomes is going to be a Hall of Famer without a ring on Sunday. Andy Reid is a Hall of Famer without a second ring, too. But it would really enhance his legacy without question if he'd win, too. It obviously would help Mahomes and Kelsey. But those guys are Hall of Famers. But I'll tell you who, and this is the guy that you got to, if he plays like he did against the Bengals, and this would be one of those goals and motivations, right, I was just talking about? You know who may need a second ring to cement his opportunity in the Hall of Fame? Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. And even maybe to an outside possibility, Frank Clark. Frank Clark has the 3rd most postseason sacks of anybody in NFL history. You're a 2-time NFL, or 2-time Super Bowl champion. That's different than just being a 1-time guy. So it can make the difference between being a borderline Hall of Famer and putting you in. And there are instances, you can go find them, where it helped to win your 2nd ring, or maybe you weren't even a great player, but you got a 3rd ring. Listen, Julian Edelman was lauded as one of the best receivers. He should be a Hall of Famer. You look at his stats, and he shouldn't be.
He got pedestrian numbers.
He's got pedestrian numbers.
Regular season for his
career. But postseason, he's got great numbers. Yeah. So people say he should be in the Hall of Fame, and then you sit and go, well, I don't know. But is that if the Patriots didn't win rings, he wouldn't even be considered for the Hall of Fame.
No, not
at all. With the exact same numbers. Chris Jones, if the Chiefs win a Super Bowl on Sunday, would have his 2nd ring, and I think obviously that enhances his chances of being an NFL Hall of Famer. And maybe if he keeps going the next few years and being dominant and having 15 sacks every year, he may not need another ring, but this certainly helps. And here's the other thing. You might have some other younger players on this team that might turn into great players that this will be their 1st ring, which is needed because they're going to get another one down the line that might help put them into the Hall of Fame. And I'd never really thought about it that way until Matthew Derrick brought it up.
Yeah, and I listened to a lot of Mahomes, and you played a lot of it today, but there's one particular part where he says, I'm grateful to be playing out here with Hall of Famers.
Yes.
He didn't say a Hall of Famer in Travis Kelce. He said Hall of Famers.
Right.
So this is all part of that. This is how you build a legacy. This is how you get into the Hall of Fame, is if you don't have quite the numbers of maybe this person right here.
Yep.
Maybe you're 2,000 yards receiving less than them. They're not in the Hall of Fame, but you've got two Super Bowls and have all these numbers in the postseason that you can add to your totals, and it blows the other guy out of the water because you played in 20 playoff games,
right,
or whatever it might be at the end of your career. And so guys like that can go up. Chris Jones can get some more boost because of that. Frank Clark can get some boost because of that.
Right.
You know, guys like Creed Humphrey, I think, can get a boost because of that, because offensive linemen aren't recognized for what they usually do in a regular season.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to have the right people to tell you, oh, he was really good at this,
right,
so he's deserving of this. But if Creed Humphrey plays like he plays and then wins a Super Bowl and then comes and gets another one later, you know, he can add to his legacy and be an offensive lineman that makes the Hall of Fame because of what he was able to do. Now, I know there's guys like Tony Boselli, people that are in there that haven't really done anything as far as postseason's concerned.
Right.
But if you need something to amplify that, especially at some of those positions where it's not always clear who the best is, just for the a normal lay fan watching, then that can add to it. Trey Smith, like anybody, you know, that, that might have a long career as an offensive lineman can add to it with a title as well.
Well, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. Jason Kelce.
Yeah.
Jason Kelce, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer right now. He's probably borderline. He's been the, what, five Pro Bowls in a row, and he's a real, considered one of the best centers in football. But you get a second ring, that elevates and helps his chances of being in the Hall of Fame as a center.
Yeah. A lot of linemen will get their recognition because from getting that extra recognition in the playoffs, because you have your Joe Bucks saying, hey, he's part of the top three offensive line or whatever of the season. That's a big reason why this team is in the playoffs. That's where, you know, John Madden did a good job of talking about linemen, and that's where they get their recognition, is these extra playoff games. And then obviously the more and more in the Super Bowl, you get a couple more weeks of that stuff. And so, yeah, that's where linemen.
But Will Shields and Willie Roe are in the Hall of Fame. They didn't win a Super Bowl. Those guys were extra bad.
They were a higher level. And had
the consecutive start streaks,
those things add up for guys like Willie
Roe. And I understand that, but I'm just pointing out that they didn't win rings.
That's why I said that Tony Boselli's in.
Yeah, right. Right, but you have to be extra good to get in as a lineman.
Yeah.
But you get the recognition of postseason play, and you have a couple of rings on your resume. Ah, that helps.
We're talking about leveling up. Here's a guy that, you know.
Here's a guy.
I think he's already in the Hall of Fame, but one that, you know, maybe from goes from Hall of Fame to like the proverbial Mount Rushmore is Andy Reid. If he gets his second Super Bowl,
right,
then you know you start thinking, whoa. Look at all these playoff appearances. Look at all these regular season wins. Look at his winning percentage compared to other people. And you're like, whoa. And now you get that second ring, and that puts you in a little bit rarer air. And, it, you know, who knows if how long Andy Reid's going to stick with this. But in the next – in this window, whatever they accomplish, he can move up from a guy that's going to make the Hall of Fame, but then to a guy that makes the – higher parts of the pyramid of the Hall of Fame.
So their legacies can be ruined with games like this. I mean, you know, until Elway won a couple of Super Bowls, he was getting blown out every time he's in the Super Bowl.
We think of Jim Kelly as a kind of a failure, you know, quote unquote failure. He was a really good quarterback.
Outstanding quarterback.
He was really good, but he went 0-for-4 in the playoffs or in the Super Bowl. And
if Jim Kelly's 2-2, we're talking differently about Jim.
Right. For sure.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't his fault that a kicker missed a kick, or he would have at least won.
Yeah.
Although it was a 48 yarder, it should be pointed out. I still say everybody acts like Scott Norwood had a chip shot. It was not
a healthy kick.
That was a healthy long kick. At that time, kickers didn't kick as far as they do today. Yeah. Can he make a 48-yard? Yes. But it wasn't automatic, clearly, as he missed it. Okay, so we've heard from all the participants. The Kelce podcast has been funny. Getting Dad, Mama Kelce, and Papa Kelce on there. That's been a lot of fun. And we are close now. We are only a couple days away from Super Bowl 57, which you hear on Z96.3 Lake at 4 o'clock with the pregame from Westwood One. Kickoff 5:30, then we'll have Chiefs local network post game Sunday night after the game, hopefully celebrating holding the Lombardi Trophy. What's the biggest what's the biggest thing that you're looking for in this game, Dusty? What's the biggest concern you have, and how do you see this game playing out?
Well, I think the biggest can you see. It's what Andy Reid talked about, actually. It's in the trenches for me. It's how can you get the pressure on defense and how can you stop the Philly pressure. But more to that is getting the pressure on defense, because you're dealing with a different quarterback than you played pretty much all year, right? Like a guy that's mobile, that can move, that can get himself out. Now, he's got some issues throwing the ball, I think, still since coming back from his injury. But I feel like bottling up Jalen Hurts is going to be the biggest key for this defense, because they've not really kind of had to go against that in the playoffs yet. And that offense can be electric if you give him what he wants and takes the time to be able to do it. It all comes, like last time the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl, where to come down to the trenches, right? Like the offensive line especially not being fully capable of doing those things. I think
they also had backup right tackle, absolutely, and backup left tackle.
Absolutely. So but that's
I just want to note it for our fans that was, they're missing two fifths of their offensive line.
Yeah, and so they're missing those guys, but that's
they're
what
not
it came down to. And exactly, they're not this year. So that's the point that I have is when the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball is very key. I wholeheartedly agree with what Andy Reid said about that. The game can be won and lost here, and it was lost here because the Chiefs didn't have a full support in the last Super Bowl they played in.
Also, it would have helped if guys could have caught the ball.
That would have helped immensely.
Even though he was under pressure, he almost pulled Houdini's out of his hat multiple times, yeah. Rabbits out of his hat.
That would have helped immensely.
Yes. And it would have helped if officials didn't call like 9 pass interference penalties in the first half on the Chiefs. And guess who was the official of that game?
Carl Cheffers.
And that's my biggest concern this game. But I'll let Jason go next.
Okay.
Biggest concern or focal point?
I think for focal point, I'm going to – well, I do think it's the pass rush for concern. I you know, the Eagles have multiple guys, and sometimes one guy can win and Mahomes can get by that. Mm-hmm. But if two guys win, you know, it's harder to find a spot to run out of and get free. So that would be the concern if you're looking for the Chiefs. I think a focal point of the game overall – all right, numbers say that Darius Slay and James Bradbury are really, really good on the outside for the Eagles as cornerbacks. But they haven't played Mahomes yet, or a Mahomes-like quarterback yet. And so now we're going to see, are they really that good on the outside? I think they'll hold up pretty good. Yeah, you know, I think Mahomes can still get some yards. Now, whether those yards turn into touchdowns, we'll see. That's what happens in a one-game situation. But that's my focal point, is that secondary for the Eagles, is it as good as really what the numbers say? Because they haven't really played that quarterback like Mahomes, or that combination of Mahomes and Kelce yet.
My focal point is red zone offense. I think both teams are going to be able to move the ball between the 20s. Mm-hmm. I think it's just they both have too many weapons. The Chiefs, of course, you know about their weapons. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, the Eagles run the ball really well. And, of course, Dusty mentioned the mobility of Jalen Hurts. He's improved as a passer. I think it comes down to what defense bends but doesn't break and stops the other team in the red zone. And if you can get a turnover, obviously that helps immensely. But if you can just hold them to 3 instead of 7. And we saw what happened in the AFC title game. How many times did the Chiefs, the first two times they had the ball, they held to 3. That kept the Bengals in the game. And then the Chiefs held the Bengals to 3 right before halftime, which was huge. So holding teams to 3 is almost as good as a punt nowadays in the National Football League in regards to the modern day rules that favor the offense and so forth and so on. So my focal point is red zone offense. When you get in the red zone, especially if you get to the 10 or inside the 10, you got to get touchdowns. You can't be kicking field goals. Here's another thing to keep aware of. The Eagles attempted the most fourth downs this year.
I was just going to say, I was going to expand on your red zone.
They're
here.
Aggressive. Yeah. The Eagles attempted the most fourth downs, and they converted quite a few of those. And by the way, the Eagles, during Nick Sirianni's 2 years as head coach of the Eagles, they have never called a timeout because the play clock was winding down and didn't have a play ready. Not one time. Mm-hmm. Now, the Chiefs have done that a lot of times. Bill Snyder, K-State did a lot. And a lot of great coaches have, not just those two guys. That's pretty impressive. That tells me, one, Nick Sirianni and his coaching staff got a great communication system. Two, it tells me Jalen Hurts is really good at relaying that stuff to his players very quickly, so he knows the playbook inside and out. Not saying Mahomes doesn't either. But a lot of times, Mahomes would be kind of like, okay, guys, give me a play here. And I think there might be times where the Chiefs have too many voices in the headset. And
that's where I was going to go next, is because obviously they're clear. clearly getting that to Jalen real quick, yes, and he's going with it. There's not Bieniemy and Reed kind of clashing, yes, and trying to figure out what play to run, and Mahomes just sitting here like, give it to me, give it to me.
And Matt Nagy's got some input too, yeah, I think. Whereas the Eagles, I think it's a little bit more simplified, or maybe they know the roles a little bit better. I don't know. But they don't hesitate. They're going to go for it, they go for it. They know when it's second down and 12, hey, we're at the Chiefs 40. We got two downs to get the 12 yards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, call this based on we got two downs. So if you're going to run a seven yard out, we'll take it, and we'll have fourth down and five. On third and 12, guys, you got two plays. Third and 12, you got two plays. We're going for it. I don't care if it's you get 5 yards, it's fourth and seven, and we're at the Chiefs 37. We're going for it. We're not going to punt. Why would we punt? We gained 20-some yards. So that's going to be a focal point for me. I am very interested in how this can be officiated. It scares me. It worries me. When Roger Goodell sits and says that the officiating hasn't been better, I about threw up. Actually, I did a little bit in my mouth. But the officiating has never been better. It has never. I would argue it's about as bad as it's been in quite some time. And in fairness to the officials, simplify the rule book. That would help them. So that's part on the NFL and Roger Goodell and the owners. And remember, Goodell works for the owners. Keep that in mind. But how are they going to officiate this? Are they going to let him play? Carl Jeffers' crew had the most penalties per game of any crew, I read the other day. So that means they're going to be too involved. And I don't want that. In a Super Bowl, I don't want the officials calling flags where there's no rhythm in the game. I want to allow the defense to defend the receivers and have a chance to defend them. Okay? Now, if the instructions to Jeffers' crew is, hey, loosen up a little bit, let them play, it's a Super Bowl, nobody's tuning in to watch a whole bunch of flags being thrown, although apparently they didn't get the memo last time Jeffers and his crew had the Super Bowl. But if that's a little bit different than last time, I think then you're going to see more field goals than touchdowns, and you're going to see both defenses do a good job in the red zone. But officiating is a concern. The other concern I have, guys, is the injured players that are going to play, are they going to make it through this game? L'Jarius Sneed, I think, will probably make it unless he takes another concussion, clearly. Another shot to the head. Willie Gay, will he re-aggravate a minor shoulder injury? Kadarius Toney always seems to be made out of glass, so is he going to first play, make a great run, and then tweak his ankle and be done, or hamstring? Juju Smith-Schuster, his knee he's had a problem with that all year. Swelling in the knee, it was even in preseason. So is that flare up again to where he can't go? What about Kelsey's back? Nobody's talked about it this week. I think it's probably okay. What happens if Mahomes gets stepped on by his offensive lineman on that right ankle? It doesn't have to be pressure. Right. It can be his own lineman, Orlando Brown stepping on it, or Joe Tooney, and then all of a sudden you got a hobbled Patrick Mahomes, and dare I say, Henny comes in and plays a little bit in Super Bowl 57. So there's all kinds of key points to look at. A lot of people point out the Eagles haven't played great quarterbacks. Rodgers and Prescott were the two best ones, and they both scored 33 or more against the Eagles. People have talked about how the Eagles' strength of schedule hasn't been that hard. The Chiefs had one of the toughest schedules in the league, and that is true. There's also been a lot of talk about how the Eagles had an easy path to the Super Bowl. They beat Daniel Jones and the Giants. That was easy. And then they beat the Niners, who basically had no quarterbacks even to defend against. And that's all true. But none of that matters Sunday. Once they get on the field, last year when these two teams played, it was a lot of offense and not a lot of defense. I think both defenses have improved drastically since that game in Philadelphia a year ago. The Chiefs won 42-30. So, time for the predictions here. The Chiefs are a 1.5-point underdog. I think that's tremendous and awesome. I want the Chiefs to be the underdog. A lot of people are on the Philly bandwagon. I think that's very interesting. Some people think Philly's the better team. I think that's interesting. Chiefs people and media people cover the Chiefs are astounded the Chiefs are an underdog. So I guess it depends on what side of the fence you're on. The over-under is 51. So here we go. Time for our Super Bowl predictions. I'll go first this time. I usually let you guys go first. I'll go first so you can rip mine apart. I've had this score in my head for almost a full 2 weeks. And the score I have in my head is a little bit unique. Not completely unique, but a little bit unique. I got 26-23 Chiefs. Comes down to a Butker field goal, and the Chiefs win 26-23. The Chiefs kick four field goals, two touchdowns. The Eagles get two touchdowns as well, and they kick three field goals. I think there's going to be lots of scoring opportunities, but I think the defense is going to hold teams to field goals, both defenses. And I think both defensive lines will get pressure on the quarterback at times. I am interested to see how the Chiefs deal with the Eagle running game. But every time I hear Chiefs fans freak out about a team they're going to play that runs the ball so well, you know what happens? The Chiefs usually win.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Derrick Henry is going to just tear us apart in the AFC title game. And didn't happen. He had 68 yards offense. Oh, my gosh. The Ravens ran for 200 yards again against us. That's great. Who won the game? Oh, yeah, Chiefs did. I'm not worried. I'm not really worried if the Eagles run for 200 yards in this game. I'm not overly concerned. Now, obviously, it lessens the possessions. But the Chiefs have shown that they can beat a team that has the ball a lot. They can beat a team as long as the defense holds them to field goals. That's the key. If the Eagles go running for 200 yards and punching in for touchdowns, that's a whole different story. And I take back what I just said. But the Chiefs usually, when they play teams that run the ball a lot or are good at running the ball, usually the Chiefs find a way to hold those teams to field goals in the red zone. So 26-23, Chiefs. Obviously, cover. They win. Oh my God! I said the Chiefs cover. That's that. We're doomed. I've got the Chiefs winning the game, and I've got the under at 49. The over under is 51. All right. Who wants to go next?
Go ahead, Dusty.
Okay.
Dusty's got the Mahomes jersey on.
I've been trying like the whole last 2 weeks to find a reason to pick the Eagles to win because like I've picked the Chiefs to lose the last two games, and so. I can't, though. Like, I'm trying to find it, and it's just not there for me. For some reason, I'm feeling good about this for the Chiefs, which concerns me.
Yeah, because I felt great about the game against the Bucks, and I didn't.
But, I don't think I'm feeling that good. Like, I understand that this could go either way. This is not Chiefs are going to come in, and I have no question that they're going to win this game.
Right.
I don't feel that way. But I do feel like they've built up enough time. The matchup I like that Andy Reid's playing the Eagles honestly in the Super Bowl, because that kind of gives him maybe a little bit more motivation too. He'll say that doesn't mean anything to him, but it does.
It does.
And you can see that when he plays the Eagles, and you can see that with some of the comments even after the game last or 2 weeks ago against the Bengals, with some of the talk before the game. Andy will still comment about some of that after it's all over, and we'll say how he felt. So I like that part of it, and I think if the defense plays like they have here in the postseason, that's where it comes down to for me. If they can continue to do that, holding the field goals. My biggest example is the Steelers game when Le'Veon Bell ran all over them, but all they got was field goals at the end of it in the playoff game that night. And so with a team that Patrick Mahomes is quarterbacking, you can't do that. You can do that against Alex Smith. So if you can do those things and have that kind of game defensively where, they'll get them through the 20s, but not get into the end zone once they get into the red zone, then that's where you need to be. And I think the Chiefs have done a pretty good job of that here lately, and I think that'll continue coming up on Sunday. So the offense, I don't need to talk about. If the Chiefs execute, they're fine there. I'm going to say 28-20. Chiefs, like late touchdown.
So we both got under. All right, Jason.
Well, I've been pretty, supportive of the Chiefs throughout the season. I thought they'd get here, but I think this is where it ends. I'm going to go with the Eagles, 27-21. I think the Eagles do certain things well, and those certain things kind of match up with maybe – I don't know. I don't want to say weaknesses. I just think there's matchups. I think the Eagles can win. I think they can give both tackles, both left and right tackles, a little bit of a problem here on Sunday. And like I said, it's one thing to have one guy win a pass rush battle. It's another to have two guys win, and that just makes it tougher for a guy like Mahomes who can scramble around. It can make it a little bit tougher for him. He might move one way, but he's going to move right into another guy that just won. So I think that's a little bit where the Eagles are going to win. I think you kind of talked about the fourth down thing. Andy Reid.
Sometimes a little conservative.
Yeah, I mean, he's way better as a Kansas City Chief than he was as a Philadelphia Eagle. But there are times he still reverts back a little bit. And I think... because he always feels he can get it back later,
and that's
great. But I do think the Eagles just don't have that mindset. They are wired new school from the get go, and they might have one more fourth down. It might come early in the game, and you might not really think about it until later. But I think there's a fourth and two that the Eagles are going to go for that the Chiefs don't, close to the red zone or in the red zone, that might be the difference. And I say 27-21.
So we all have under 51. Yeah. So if you're at home listening to this, take the over and run to the bank. We all got the under. I think the under is all controlled by the officiating. I really do. If they call it tight and there's all kinds of defensive holds, pass interferences, then you're going to go over 51.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if they let them play a little bit, which I think they'll be instructed to let them play a little bit, now whether or not Carl Jeffers listens to the league, I don't know. I think it's under. So we got three close games. Nobody's calling for a blowout here. Jason's got the Eagles. You can send your complaints to jasonbroadfoot@gmail.com. Actually, he doesn't have an email like that, but maybe if somebody else named Jason Broadfoot gets some hate mail, that'd be great. Actually, not great for that guy, but great for us because it'd be funny. So Chiefs picked by myself and Dusty. Jason goes with the Eagles. All kinds of bets for the Super Bowl. All kinds of bets, from how long the first song that Rihanna sings to the national anthem, how long it is. But here's one I've never seen before in the Super Bowl. The brotherly love line. There is a prop bet out there. Travis Kelce receiving yards versus Jason Kelce snaps played. So right now the line is Kelce to have 6.5 yards less than Kelce snaps played. So here's a fun one. Jason Kelce is averaging 67 snaps per game over his last three contests. So going off of 67 snaps.
61 yards for Kelce.
Do you think Kelce is going to be over 61 yards or under 61 yards? Or actually, it's going to be 6.5 over. So Kelce's got to have 74 to win the bet. He's got to have 74. I misread that. So he's got to be 74 yards, 7 over, to get the bet won. Okay, that's if it was. But if Jason Kelce gets hurt and plays three snaps, all Kelsey's got to do is get 10 yards. If Travis Kelce gets hurt, Jason Kelce, all he's got to do is play
some bad beats there. There are definitely potential for that.
No doubt about it. So just one of the interesting prop bets that I saw in regards to the game, prop bet, in-game bets, whatever. Big 12 conference announced yesterday. They reached an agreement with Texas Oklahoma for them to leave the conference in 2024. Good riddance. I'm kidding. Kinda. Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark cited that the agreement will help accelerate the new beginning as a 12-team league. The penalty for early withdrawal for Oklahoma and Texas is $100 million in foregone distributable revenues, which can be partially offset with future revenues. There's a full statement. You can read all about it at Big12Sports.com. The Longhorns and Sooners now join the SEC as they begin their new media rights deal with ESPN in 2024. It also marks the first year of the expanded 12-team college football playoff and the transition of USC and UCLA from the Pac-12 to the Big 12. So the SEC and the Big 10 will both have 16-team conferences starting in 2024. After this upcoming season, the Big 12 will play with 14 members in this upcoming right now season in the fall, and then they'll be back to 12 in 2024. Or will they? Brett Yormark, now with all of this, his first step was get a media deal. Listen, I think we're going to look back on the Big 12 and say Brett Yormark saved the Big 12 and actually made it prosper. And it was the greatest hire after messing up royally with the commissioner on this league for a few years, a couple decades. You got it right with Brett Yormark. Yormark is a guy that understands the entertainment value, who understands that there's streaming out there. There's all kinds of TV entities. He understands time zones. He understands TV sets. He gets it. He talks with agents. He's been tied to high-profile agents and this and players and so forth and organizations. Brett Yormark has seen the ins and outs. So when they hired him as commissioner, it was kind of an outside-the-box hire, and I loved it. And I was like, I hope it works, but I love it. At least it's something different. So Brett Yormark, one of the first things he wanted to do, one of the top things on his agenda when he became the commissioner was to, we're opening up business early for a new TV deal, which was smart as heck. And it's not like it took rocket science to figure that out. Good move. But he parlayed that into a really good TV deal financially for the member schools. His second goal was to, well, you had to find members, of course. Before the TV deal, really, you had to make sure you had teams that would replace Texas Oklahoma. So he did that. Then he got the TV deal. Then one of the other things he wanted to do was he wanted to find an end game here with Texas Oklahoma so that he could accelerate and move on with the league that he knows he's going to have going forward. And now that's been accelerated because Texas Oklahoma is only going to be in 2023. Then they're gone. That now accelerates him to say, okay, to everybody out there, we're open for business, as he's already said. He wants some teams in the Pacific time zone. He wants four time zones. No other conference has four time zones. The Big 12 has a chance because the Pac-12 has some issues. There's AD leaking out his opinion the other day, not very happy with what the Pac-12's done because the Big 12 beat him to the punch with the TV deal. So Brett Yarmark has really undermined the Pac-12, which is legal to do and was smart. It's an eye for an eye, right? It's a business. It's cutthroat sometimes. And so they've reached out to Colorado. They've reached out to Arizona State. They have reached out to Arizona State. They even said, we'd like to be, we talked about the time zone situation. Oregon is out on the table possibly. So Brett Yarmark now knows that in 2024 I have 12 teams. And that's fine. But I also can go out and market my conference and say, listen, you don't got to deal with Texas being a you-know-what. You don't got to deal with Oklahoma, flexing their muscle. Come to our league where we're all equal. We're all equal. Come to our league. And look, we can offer more than the Pac-12 will on their new deal that's going to be predominantly mostly a lot more streaming than what we already have. Come join our league. Maybe San Diego State is that team. That's a name that's been thrown out lately. So Brett Yarmark has had kind of a checkoff list of things he wanted to accomplish, and he's already been able to do some of those things. And I think it's going, for the most part, the way he wants it to go.
And I really don't think it's going to take very long at all until we hear Oregon or Colorado or whatever teams it's going to be. I think now that the Oklahoma and Texas thing is settled, I just don't think it'll be very long until we hear more about some movement to the Big 12.
Right. No, I agree. Max says, I can't believe you made the whole show without talking about the Chiefs' running game. Well, you just ruined that, Max. And you talked about how important the offensive line is, and you picked the Chiefs to win, and you're going with the best quarterback in football, which we all agree, so forth and so on. Yes, Mahomes is the best quarterback in football, and he's not even 100% right now, and I still don't think he'll be 100% on Sunday. I do think the running game is important. I do think that the Chiefs, they're going to have to run the ball effectively at times in this game, and I still am scared to death about 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. Mm-hmm. And 3rd-and-2, 4th-and-2. Whereas the Eagles, they know they can get it. The Chiefs, there's a lot of Chiefs fans don't know of that. I don't know Andy Reid knows they're going to get it. And it is befuddling and blows my mind that Andy Reid, the genius that he is, and you've got the great quarterback in football, and you got the great, maybe the best tight end of all time, too, by the end of his career. You're sitting here going, how can we not get a yard on 3rd down? How can we not get a yard on 4th down? It blows my mind how difficult it is for the Chiefs to get that yard or two in short yardage situations. I'm telling you, they're better off 3rd and 5, 4th and 6 instead of 4th and 2. And that comes down to the offensive line. Like, I think the offensive line just, they don't run the ball enough to where that's not their identity. The offensive line isn't as great at run blocking as I think they could be because that's just not what Andy Reid runs. And so, thus, they're not as good at run blocking because they got focused so much on pass protection and pass blocking and RPOs at times as well. And then Mahomes moving out of the pocket with his mobility that they don't have enough time to really focus on running the ball because, one, we're not going to run it 35 times a game anyway. So why waste our time on that? But it does show up in short yardage situations where the Chiefs just aren't good at running the ball for a first down, like the Eagles are. So that's a big concern I have.
As a lineman, it's hard to retreat, yeah. Take the punishment, take the punishment, and then all of a sudden have to just push forward on one play. And so it's difficult to do that. So, so that's where the 3rd-and-1 problems come in from.
I still like Dusty's idea. You put Noah Gray or Jerick McKinnon or Travis Kelce under center, and you take Colin Saunders and Michael Burton, and you just shove.
Well, you'll see the Eagles do it.
Eagles do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a concern I have as well, is that short yardage situation.
You mentioned, like, A.D. Reed, like, how smart he is, and he's supposed to be this genius. But isn't
that's
it
kind of drive him nuts.
Isn't it kind of like a life, right? Like, some of the smartest, I said some, not all, just when I say this, some of the smartest people in the world are so far away from easy that they don't know how to do it anymore. Like, they don't know how to just get the easy thing and move forward, right? Like, some of the geniuses probably in life.
Yes.
Like, Yes. What do I eat for lunch today? You know, like just the easy stuff that just gets out of their mind because they've had to learn so much and they've become just this genius of even football. And I think that's not just Andy Reid in football. That's more than just Andy Reid, but we see it on a weekly basis because we're Chiefs fans.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, why do people make it more difficult than it needs to be? But it's just like, you've done so much and drawn so many plays up that you forget that, it doesn't always have to be the quarterback if I want a quarterback sneak.
And I think analytics has come into the game so much now I think coaches are second guessing themselves even more now. Like, I think the easy thing, you know, it is very questionable, you know, punting the ball on fourth down and 7 with Mahomes AFC title game and giving Joe Burrow the ball when the Chiefs were at the 38 yard line of Cincy is a little too far for a field goal Butker in those conditions. And the Chiefs offense had half the receivers out. Mahomes still banged up. And I was okay with the punt in that situation because the defense was playing really well. And I probably would have been what I chose to do. But there are a lot of people that say that Andy made a mistake there. He should have gone for it. And his defense bailed him out. But I say, sometimes coaches say, forget the analytics. Go with your gut. Go with what you see. Because analytics don't figure in momentum. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs, and they don't figure in injuries either, by the way. So the Chiefs were playing really good defense, and it worked out for the Chiefs. Although after they gave up a 3rd and 16, I did not feel so good about it. I was like, maybe we should have gone for it. But in this game, and Jason alluded to it earlier, Andy has gotten more aggressive with the Chiefs going for it in fourth down, and part of that is the Mahomes factor. But there are times yet where he will surrender a 4th and 2 at the Eagle 45, and he'll punt when he probably should go for it. No, with the Chiefs are 4th and 2. No, he should go 4th and 5. 4th and 7, like we had the Bengals, that was a 50-50 proposition based on the analytics, and a lot of people were critical that Andy got away with that one. That was a mistake, even though it worked out. Now, I don't agree with that so much in that one, but because the defense is playing so well. But that is another huge factor of this game, is the Eagles seem to be probably the more aggressive team when it comes to fourth down calls and going for it more often, and that puts more pressure on the opposing team's defense. And thus, if you can convert a couple fourth downs, you keep the ball in your hands longer, you keep Mahomes off the field longer, and then the ultimate thing goes back to mine is, do you cash it for 7 or do you settle for 3? Yeah. And if you get 7s by going for fourth downs eventually on the drive instead of 3s, that could very well be the difference in this game, because I think it's gonna be a tight game.
We still don't present analytics the way they really should be.
No.
Sometimes they put 2 results on there, but there really should be 4.
Yeah.
It should be if you succeed on the fourth down attempt and fail on the fourth down attempt, and then good punt, which would be inside the 10 or something, and like say it goes into the end zone, bad punt, 20 yard line, and you know, so they don't present them just perfectly yet, but they'll learn. They'll get better at that.
Well, the analytics may say you don't punt in that situation, but then Townsend puts it at the 1, and then the Chiefs sack Burrow and get a safety. That isn't figured in the analytics when the punter pins them at the 1. Also not figured in the analytics is you punt it through the end zone, and they get a touchback, and you only gain 17 yards of field position. Mm-hmm. So you're right. There's analytics is very flawed.
And they didn't give you the failure rate of that if you just miss the fourth down.
Right.
You know, and give Cincinnati the ball better field position than a touchback.
Right.
You know, they didn't give you that. Yeah, they just gave you the Chiefs should have done this because if they get this fourth down, the success rate is blah, blah, blah.
Because the analytic is based on the Chiefs getting the first down. It's not based on the Chiefs not getting 4th and 7 and the Bengals start at the 38, 39 and have the shorter field instead of even a touchback. Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
It's just the way it's – now, it still may very well came out that maybe they should have gone for it, but they didn't present it perfectly, and that's where TV states, they'll learn.
I just hope the Chiefs blow them out. We don't have to worry about it. All right. Don't let it come down to a controversial officiating call, and please don't let it come down to the Chiefs fail on 3rd and 4th and 1.
Right.
That would be about appropriate, wouldn't it? The thing that's bothered them for the last few years, you know, final drive, Chiefs are down 3 or down 6, and they need the touchdown or they need a field goal, and they have 2nd down and 1. And they don't pick up a first down on 3 plays.
Yep.
With the greatest quarterback that ever lived, according to some. I hope it doesn't come down to that.
Don't let the halftime show ruin your day. Yes. You know, just if you don't like it, you know what it is, go outside for a minute. Just
yeah. You know. Enjoy Rihanna
right.
or just leave the building, yeah. okay?
I don't if Rihanna's on my TV, my day is not ruined.
No. no I'm not either. I think she's a tremendous entertainer. She's fine
yeah,
to
I mean,
look
the
at.
Whole thing,
she got
like,
great music.
Yeah, I like her music.
I do too. Yeah. I think it's a really good selection. I'm really good. If you want to go watch George Strait in a chair, then pull up the video on your VHS and have a great time. Enjoy Super Bowl 57. That was a low blow. So, some people don't even know what VHS is. Later on another show, we'll explain that to you younger people. Or even CDs, for crying out loud. Right. That's how young people are becoming. Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl 57 on Z96.3 Lake. Pregame coverage from Westwood One at 4. Kickoff 5:30. Go Chiefs!
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.